Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and this is Carl, and this is the ISF podcast. We have a special one today. We're going to be talking about movies that we are thankful for, and we'll get into that in a moment. But first, I'd like to introduce our my co-host, and that would be Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
How did I know you were going to do that? Seriously. So
you know me too well.
This is true. This is true. So I did want to make an announcement before we start. Rachel had been with us for quite a while back in the days when I was working with Stephen Ronquillo, and she just returned, and I want to make an announcement that not only is she a part of Deviant Legion, but she's going to begin a new show sometime, certainly by 2021, probably sometime in December. So, Rachel, do you want to talk about that? Tell them what you have planned.
Well, we have a lot of really interesting things planned. I just want to say that this is going to be a little bit less subject-specific. We're calling it Down the Rabbit Hole. And it's a variety of topics, anything from, like, you know, I realized today that I turned from the cool suburban mom into the get off my lawn old lady, and it started making me think about stories of, you know, other times that people in my life have realized, oh my God, I hit that milestone. And it's a total rabbit hole you can go down with all of these stories and, you know, all of these moments in life that you realized, you know, what was actually going on. And you can do that with anything. You can do that with books. You can do that with movies. And just really any topic that you can just follow the path down and keep going. And we're hoping it's going to be an interesting look into just really anything people are interested in looking into.
That's true. And again, we're very, very happy that you're part of this. And this is going to be a great show because
Rachel does a
really good job. So I'm all for this. So what we're going
to
talk about tonight. Oh, go ahead, sweetie.
Oh, I just said you guys are just trying to make me blush over here.
We'll probably make you, like, go crazy later, so let's forget about the blush.
Flattery will get you everywhere.
Maybe the eyeliner, but that's okay. Anyway, what we're going to talk about tonight is movies that we are thankful for. It is November. We are very close to Thanksgiving. Now, when we talk about that, and I was talking to Rachel about this earlier, these are not just your favorite movies, but these are movies that change your life. You may not watch them all the time because they bring up emotions, they bring up, you know, some feelings, but they're important because they changed your attitude or they changed where you were going, things like that. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. So Rachel, do you want to start us off?
Well, I can start with my most basic movie that changed my life. You're going to laugh at me really, really hard, but I have a really good reason. The movie that first changed my life, and this is why it's important, was Short Circuit. Yes, I'm talking Johnny Five is alive, the robot, yes. That movie was one of the only movies I had a copy of, A, when I was a kid, and B, it was the first movie that I fell in love with and made me fall in love with not only science and engineering and things, but movies in general. And I knew that there was something out there better than the dribble that they were giving me as a 4- and 5-year-old kid, because Short Circuit was obviously proof of that. I mean, it was genius. And that movie, I am thankful for actually getting me into movies beyond just the princess cartoons that they were trying to show me at that age.
Somehow I don't think princess cartoons would go over well with you.
It depends on which ones. I mean, if we're talking about Grimm's Grimace, I had that coloring book when I was a kid. So there were definitely princesses in there that didn't necessarily live. It was a coloring book. It was a coloring book of the original Grimm's fairy tales.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
So it was actually a coloring and storybook, but it was all of the Grimm's fairy tales in their very grimmest, like, wow, Bluebeard was messed up. I'm just going to say that.
So I'll tell you a little story here, talking about princesses and dolls. I was very young, and my sister had a Chatty Cathy doll, which was relatively large. Now, have you ever seen the movie Small Soldiers?
Yes.
Remember the Barbie dolls?
Yes.
That's exactly what I did with the Chatty Cathy.
Oh, well.
I was a terrible brother. What can I tell you?
You know, it happens. I was an only child, so I was forced to do that to my own toys.
You weren't forced. You just wanted to, which is cool, too.
I mean, to each their own. It's a healthy, creative outlet, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now for me, I'm afraid I should warn the people that are listening that some of the ones, well, most of the ones that I'm going to talk about are a little more personal and maybe a little on the sad side. Nonetheless, I'm really thankful for all these movies that I'm going to talk about. The first one is the original Frankenstein. Now, people who have listened to this show and listened to Carl's Tavern do know some of my background. I was born with cerebral palsy. And so up until 8 years old, I had braces on. And I couldn't walk well. I wasn't athletic at all, couldn't go out. I basically read and watch TV, and one of the things I loved was we were in Pittsburgh, and it was a Chiller Theater, and that was Chilly Billy Cardilly, so I saw the original Frankenstein, and this is the 1931 with Boris Karloff, and that was the first movie where I understood what an outcast was. And that was the first movie I ever saw where I cried my eyes out. I was probably around 5 years old. And yet that movie meant so much to me in terms of it sort of like bridled me up to know what I was going to go through to a certain degree. And to me, if you look at the Universal Monsters, most of them, there's this sense of pathos. There's this sense that you're empathetic toward them. And that's the whole point. And I think that's the real point here, is that the monster, the creature, was not the monster. It was Frankenstein himself was the monster. And the creature was just misunderstood. So to me, that's a really important film for me.
Well, and actually, I wholeheartedly agree with that, and I don't mean to make kind of a cheesy correlation here, but for me, I grew up in a very science-minded household. My uncle is literally like a super genius, builds computers and all kinds of things. And so I grew up in a science-minded household. So when I saw this, what appeared to be very sentient robot being very misunderstood by everyone, he's like, I don't want to hurt anybody. I just want to do my thing. That really spoke to me on a level, because I was an outcast kid. I mean, being raised where I was and being raised by, you know, the kind of very open-minded person that I was in the very deep South, it was not easy. Plus, I was very small, skinny, gangly, just everything you could think of. And so that really I can completely understand why that's an important movie.
Yeah, and I don't mean to be a downer here, because to be honest, all these films that I'm talking about, really, you know, you learn lessons and you put them into your life, and all these movies changed me for the better. So you know, to me that's important. You know, some of the shit that you go through is not pleasant, but if you find a way to get through it and find a way to, you know, have something that helps you get through it, whether it be a book or music or a movie, and in my case, all three, that's a wonderful thing, because you survive and you keep going on, and you find yourself later, and you become
exactly
who you are.
Well, every movie I have ever seen has shaped me or changed me in one way or another, even if that is, you know, because that's the first time I said, I want my money back. I'm never going to get that hour and a half of my life back.
Yeah.
Or, you know, changed me to a point that I really started rethinking the way that I was doing things. I think that that's the beauty of, you know, cinema especially, but any sort of media that people can connect with is there for a reason.
Oh, true, true. And even if it's for entertainment. I remember I had a really bad day once, and I went to the theater, and I didn't expect the movie to be good. And it was Undercover Brother, and I laughed my ass off.
I did too when I saw that one.
And coming out of that theater, I was in such a better mood. All of that shit disappeared. And that's one of the reasons we go to films. That's one of the reasons we love movies. Because movies can change your attitude, even if just for a day or 2 hours of escape. It's a great thing.
Exactly.
So moving on, tell us another one that changed your life.
Okay, well, like I said, I have a list of a few, but I guess I'll go somewhat more chronologically. Another really weird pick, and again, I have my reasons for this, but Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. I know. It's not exactly life-changing in its spiritual message or anything, but that was the first time that I was really introduced to the idea of horror, was through that movie. I mean, here is this beautiful woman just in all of her gothly glory. I mean, just kicking ass, taking names, being funny, and loving good horror movies. And when they played Attack of the Killer Tomatoes in Elvira, I died, because some of my earliest memories are of my favorite babysitter, and she tragically passed away when I was very young, so she was not my babysitter anymore, and that was very hard for me. But that was one of the movies that they used to play on Friday and Saturday nights when she babysat me. So when I saw Attack of the Killer Tomatoes in Elvira, I made that correlation of, oh my God, like, I always wondered what that movie was. I thought I was like hallucinating it as a 4-year-old or something, but no, it's real. And that movie introduced me to the idea of horror movies. And that's when I started doing my research at a very young age and started getting into like all of the classics. I was so stoked when my late stepmother worked at a video store for a while and they were getting rid of all of their Universal Monsters promos. Like all the big cardboard cutouts and stuff. I had the Universal Monsters. I had the Creature from the Black Lagoon. I had Frankenstein. I had Dracula. I had the Wolfman. All of them, like giant cardboard cutouts, hung out in my room at my dad's house. But he got mad one
time
and burned them all. So, yeah. But that was when I started getting into the classic horror and then into the more modern horror, as you know, Carl at least knows from some of my earlier stints on the previous shows on the Deviant Legion. I was more of the modern horror fan because I'm a I'm the baby of the group. But Elvira, I'm thankful for because, A, that's a movie I can always sit down and watch and always just, like, be happy and feel good. It's a wonderful movie, just fun. It's funny. It's got all of the great camp. But it also introduced a young Rachel to her future obsession with horror. And I am thankful for that because horror movies have really gotten me through a lot of tough spots in my life.
Yeah, I agree. And I just have to say, since we're talking about Elvira, anyone who's listening who did not hear last week's show with Sam Irvin.
Oh, my God, he's so great.
But Sam actually directed Cassandra Peterson, Elvira, and the follow-up to Mistress
Elvira in the Haunted Hills.
Yes. And they're good friends, and he talks very, very much about Elvira. So, yeah, I mean, that's one thing with me. You know, I mentioned Frankenstein, and I mentioned Chiller Theater. For me, as a kid in the 60s, it wasn't video. It was the horror house. It was, you know, and they would run all the Universals and all the old films. And the 50 science fiction films.
I mean, no. You stole my beating heart. I long for those days, you know.
You know, there are because still hosts around, and I know if you have Roku, one is Basil Grimsby, and there's numerous other ones out there too.
Well, definitely, but there's got to be something said for actually going to like a movie house and seeing, you know, a classic horror movie. I've never had that experience, and it makes me very sad.
Well, have you ever been to, do you have any drive-ins in your area?
I think that they opened one up recently. And I know that when I was a very young child out here, we did have, I think the drive-in was open temporarily. I mean, we moved to the house I was at when I was about almost 3, so well over 30 years ago. And we had 2 drive-in theaters, like 2 drive-in screens that were in a vacant lot for a really long time, and then they started using it as a pumpkin patch, and they knocked down one of the screens, and eventually they knocked down both of the screens, and now it's a Kohl's.
Oh, damn.
Yeah,
I know.
Depressing.
You know, I'm going to be doing an article. I'm about halfway through it right now about my time at a drive-in theater, working at a drive-in theater, in quotes, by the way. But, yeah, I mean, seeing them on the big screen is real special. Of course, at this time, this was on TV, when I'm talking about. But moving on, my next one is probably the roughest of all the stories. And I've actually have talked about this before. But a movie that absolutely, without a doubt, saved my life. And I am not joking. I would not be alive if it weren't for this film. And that is Harold and Maude. When we moved to Bradford, I was 14 years old, and it was still very apparent. I'd been out of braces for 6 years or so, but it was still apparent that I was very geeky. I had problems with my legs. You know, people could tell I had problems. Now, these days, you can't, but back then, you could, and because we had moved to a new place that was very, very redneck, I got beat up a lot. I got pushed down. I got beat up and in school, and the school wouldn't do a goddamn thing about it.
Of course not.
Well, the only way I could escape at times was after school, I'd take a walk in the woods and walk home through this wooded area. And I was doing it one day, and the kids that were giving me all this trouble were there. I'm not going to go into specifics, but it was not pleasant at all. And I mean, not at all. I come home and I take a shower, get all the shit and piss off of me. And my mother was teaching downstairs piano. She didn't see me come in. Nobody there. So I went to the TV and I turned on the TV. We had the early HBO. We were one of the test areas for HBO. And right then and there, Harold and Maude comes on. Now, if you have not seen Harold and Maude, and spoilers, the beginning scene is you see a pair of feet. And he's coming down the stairs and that. And as it goes on, you realize he's going to commit suicide. Now, imagine me watching this. But then something hit me and said, but this is the beginning of the film. Because the credits are rolling and so on and so forth. Beginning. I said, this can't be. And I saw it. And then there's the joke with his mother, and then the movie goes on, and it becomes one of the most life-affirming films I've ever seen. And by the end of that film, I won't say my whole attitude had changed, but one thing had changed. I was going to live, and they could go fuck themselves. That movie... I can't watch that movie often. I can't. This is not a film that I'm going to watch all the time because it does bring up some feelings. But yet, I make myself do it because it reminds me about living and that you have to live and you have to live life to the fullest. And that, of course, is what Maude teaches Harold. And not only that, you know, the other thing was the sense, and I didn't catch it the first time I saw it, that she's a survivor of the Holocaust. And that means something, too, that you can survive the worst. And that's what that movie taught me. And that has given me so much strength over the years. It's amazing. So that movie, I'm more than thankful for. Without that movie, I wouldn't be here.
Well, I am really glad that you saw that movie because otherwise you wouldn't be here. And you're kind of an awesome dude. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that. So yay for Harold.
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm not perfect. Trust me.
Oh, I didn't say perfect, honey.
Good. So, let's get a little lighter in our picks here and that because
you know
I don't want to bum everybody out.
I actually have the perfect segue for that because it is a movie that did that for me, but in a much lighter way. Okay, I know you've probably seen this. Not a whole lot of people have. I mean, I know our ISF guys probably have. We've talked about it a few times there. Stranger Than Fiction. Yes, that Will Ferrell movie, Stranger Than Fiction.
Before you start, I just got to say something. Uh-huh. It is the only Will Ferrell movie I like. Seriously, I'm not a big fan, but that movie I really like. So go ahead.
It is, you know this about me, but you know that is one of my favorite movies of all time. And
yeah, you actually posted it today on Facebook.
Yes, I did. Actually, somebody else posted it in the Incredibly Strange Films group that we are associated with. They posted about it, and actually somebody posted about it last week, and I commented because I can't help it. I just, that movie is for many reasons, it is a life-affirming, beautiful movie to me. So I first heard about this movie in a random clip I saw somewhere. And I had at this point, I hadn't had television in years, so I know I didn't see some sort of television ad for it, but maybe I did in passing somewhere. I see this movie where it looks like Will Ferrell is going crazy, and he has a narrator.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, wow, that actually looks like something I'd watch Will Ferrell in. Damn. I got to find out what that movie is because I missed the name of it in the preview. For like 2, maybe 3 years after that, I have this memory in my head of this preview for a movie that I have no idea about. Nobody's talked about it. I have no idea what the name is. And I'm going around starting to look like the crazy person going, no, no, it was a movie where Will Ferrell played a serious character. And they're like, shh. Bitch, you crazy. Like, go away. And I was like, and there's a lady narrating in his head? And they're like, are you sure that's not the lady narrating in your head, crazy cake? So finally, I had this ritual of every other week when I got paid, I would go down to the video store. Yeah, back when we had video stores. Let me go get my pantaloons and my wooden tee. Showing my age here. So I went down to the video store, and we had this amazing chain of video stores out here called like the Family Star or something like that. And they had a literally buy one, get four free. I didn't say that backwards. Buy one video, get four free. And it wasn't even a full price video, which is inadvertently how I also got hooked into Masters of Horror. But I see this movie in the bin. And it's got Will Ferrell, and there's a big apple on the front, and he's holding a briefcase and screaming at the sky. And I was like, this has to be it. So, of course, I bought it. And being that I have more of a background in, like, literature and stuff, I absolutely died. That movie was so poignant and so beautiful. I mean, it's a man who is at an impasse in his life and doesn't even realize it until just one moment, one literal, like, 1 second difference in his routine changes his life, like, completely upends it. And through this, you know, catastrophe, and he thinks he's crazy, and little did he know, I mean, it all comes together, and this man finally learns how to live by just letting go. And at first, I just thought it was a great and hilarious movie, but it ended up being a movie that I started falling asleep to, and I started watching it a lot and catching a lot of the nuance in it. I mean, everything in the background, everything in the foreground, it's all there for a reason. And if you really watch it, you can see things start to deteriorate as he, the Harold Crick that he thinks he is, starts to deteriorate. And that's the point that I was at in my life, was I was stagnating. I was unhappy, and I didn't even realize how unhappy I was because I was set in this routine. And it wasn't until I started changing things ever so slightly, you know, maybe just hit the snooze button for a change instead of getting right up when it goes off. Maybe that 5 minutes of extra sleep gives me the dream I needed to get through the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I really started taking the little things more into my fold and appreciating the little things. I mean, I to this day think that one of the most romantic scenes I've ever seen in the movie is when he brings the baker the box of flowers.
Yeah.
Which then leads into the, you know, Reckless Eric cover of Whole Wide World. Beautiful, beautiful scene there. And I just, that's been a movie that's been a constant comfort to me, because when you look at all the background stories, you don't realize how much you affect other people and how much they actually affect you, even indirectly. And it made me start taking a closer look at the things that I was doing that, you know, maybe I didn't, you know, hit the walk signal, but the person behind me, I don't even realize, is blind and probably needed it. Or just the little things. It really helps me appreciate that. And it also helps me see that love is not necessarily what they make it out to be in the Hollywood pictures. That's a really big misconception that especially, you know, young girls get, is that, you know, it's supposed to be this big, grand, romantic thing. And no, it's okay to kind of hate somebody sometimes, even though you love them. It's okay to speak your mind. And if somebody can't handle that, they don't need to be around you.
Yeah. Now, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I've always said you've got to look for the small blessings in life. That's how you get through. And it's surprising. You know, it could be you're walking down the street and somebody smiles at you, or you smile at somebody else. Even that, something that small, can have a huge difference in someone's
life. Exactly. And I really loved that, you know, it goes from the narrator narrating every aspect of his life to slowly it kind of fades off and he starts living his own life.
Right.
Until it kicks back in towards the end. And then it's like, oh, shit, she's about to finish the book. And she never doesn't kill a character. So I don't. And that was the other thing is ultimately in the end, you know, no matter what his fate ended up being, he was okay accepting it. He accepted it and said, no, this has to happen. Like, it can't be any other way. Like, this is a masterpiece, and I'm glad that I could be a part of it. So if you have to kill me, like, please do it. And I think that was a really an acceptance of once you've lived a good life and you've done the things that you actually want to do with your life, it's okay to let things go, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. Very much. That's a really good choice. It's a great choice.
Thank you. I thought
so
it was a little
I'm going to move on.
Yeah.
And I'm going to talk about a film, but first I'm going to talk about Shakespeare. Okay, so when I was growing up in ninth grade, I had an English teacher. His name was Dick Giannotti. And Vic was this little guy, like 5'4", 5'5". But he was a defensive back for the Green Bay Packers during their glory days. And he did not take shit from anyone, okay? But I loved him. And he introduced us to Shakespeare. And, of course, you go through high school, you know, you do Romeo and Juliet, you do Henry V, you do all these. Now, if I were to ask you off the top of your head, if you had a favorite Shakespeare play, not an adaptation, but just a Shakespeare play, what one would it be?
Excuse me for interrupting. Our guest is on the line here, and I'm going to pop them right into the show, okay?
Oh, okay, so we have a guest
in that one.
Okay.
Yes, we do.
And it's true.
All right.
You motherfuckers.
Okay, our guest is in.
Hello, who's this?
It's Mark.
Hey, Mark, how are you? This is Mark Shepard. Mark has been on the show a number of times with me, and... Mark, so we have a question for you.
Sure.
What's the movie that changed your life?
Obviously, Last House on the Left.
And why would that be?
Let me see. I think because I was in it.
Yeah,
I
that
know,
would change your
I'm
life.
I'm looking at your face right now. Sorry.
Okay, I'm going to warn you. Rachel's going to go bad girl.
Maybe just a little bit.
Say hello, Rachel, to Mark Scheffler.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Rachel, to Mark Shepard. Hi, sorry.
How are you?
So, Mark, tell us a little bit of how you got involved with Last House on the Left and that for our listeners.
I was an actor in New York. One day walked into my manager's office. He said, I have an audition for you. Go down to this address. It's in the 40s off of between 5th and 6th. Go up to the suite. Ask for one of two guys, one guy named Wes and one guy named Sean, either one of those guys, and good luck. And it was Wes Craven and Sean Cunningham were the two guys. I went in, I auditioned, walked back to my manager's office, and by the time I had gotten back, they had already called and said, "That's our Hitler."
Wow.
That's very, very cool. That's very
yeah.
cool. So you do this movie, and of course, doing a film is going to change your life no matter what. But how did all things work out? Because you actually went a little different way.
What happened was the film was originally made as like a drive-in movie, like a drive-in horror movie. And when it was released, that's where it went. It was funded by a company called Hallmark Releasing out of Boston. And they had a chain of drive-ins, so they put up the $90,000-$100,000, and they made the movie, and they put it out. But what happened was, about 2 or 3 weeks after it was out, Roger Ebert writes a 3.5 out of 4-star review, and literally overnight, it went from drive-ins into mainstream theaters, and that's when everything changed.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
You know. And to, further extrapolate on your point, yes, I did. I went into writing. I stopped acting and wanted to be behind the camera and create the stories. So I carved out a nice career for myself as a TV writer and a couple of films, but mostly TV. And now I just kind of hang out.
Wow, that sounds fantastic.
Right. Well, Rachel, I'm sure you might have a question or two, so go for it.
Well, actually, I'm kind of interested. You said you've written for TV, and that's more your wheelhouse. What is it that you've done there?
Oh, let me see. Well, I went into sitcom writing, and the first show that I ever wrote a long time ago, obviously, I wrote a Sanford with Red Fox. And then I started writing. I wrote Love Boat, and I worked on Charles in Charge. I worked on Who's the Boss. I produced Harry and the Hendersons, wrote and produced that the first season. Just a bunch of shows.
Oh, my God.
You know? Yeah, just, I had one of those kind of very successful, mediocre careers.
Hey, that is fantastic, though. Harry and the Hendersons is actually something very special to my family, so... It's a really long story involving my grandmother and an escaped orangutan hanging on a laundry line. And, yeah.
I'll tell you guys a story from Harry and the Hendersons. I was shot at Universal. That's where we did the show. And my office was in a building that was close to Cahuenga Boulevard, which is kind of like the main street that Universal runs off of. So I had an office with my partner, Sam Denoff, and we had a long hallway outside, 25, 30 feet long. And often when I was stuck on story points, I would take a putter and a couple of golf balls, and I'd go out and I'd slam golf balls against the doors and the walls trying to just, jog my brain. So I was out there doing that one day, and the door from the outside opened up, and in walks this girl about 17, 18 years old, bushy hair, kind of cute, flush, face blush, sweating, holding an 8x10. So immediately, I knew she was an actress, and she was looking around for something. So she sees me, and she says, "Is this the, Bungalow 27? And I said, "No, it's the 501 building." And she said, "Oh, shit, I'm late. I'm fucking late. I'm late. Oh, man, just traffic. I'm late for an audition." I said, "Wait a second. Just calm down, calm down. Just chill out. Let me see if I can help you." So I take her into my office, and Sam is in there, and he was older than me, and he looks at her and says, "Hello." And she says, "Hello." And she sits down, and I give her a bottle of water. I take her a picture, and I said, "Who are you supposed to see?" So she gives me the phone number, the name of the casting person and the phone number. And I look at it, I call up, I said, "Hey, this is Mark Scheffler, the producer of Harry and the Hendersons. I'm here with," and I look at the name on her picture, "I'm here with Hilary Swank, and she's going to be late for her audition." And is that okay? And, oh, yes, fine, whatever you want, no problem. Just send her along when you're finished with her. And I said, yeah, great. So I looked at her, and I said, you're chilled. So that's I met Hilary Swank for the first time. And then actually 3 weeks later, I cast her in a little bit part in the show.
Oh, cool.
Wow, that is fantastic.
That's a Hollywood story for you.
Mm-hmm. Now, one other thing I should say, too, because Rachel and I were actually talking about this. You also did some stand-up, did you not?
I did and still do, pre-pandemic. And, yes, I'm one of those guys who's considered I'm an original Comedy Store regular, original paid regular. And
nice.
My name's on the wall. And you know, my peer group is like Letterman and Robin Williams and Billy Crystal and Richie Lewis and Larry and, you know, just the whole crew of those guys who were my age were my peers.
Wow, I had dreams of joining, like, Second City when I was a kid, but...
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Fantastic. Were you in Second City?
No, I wasn't, but I knew a lot. I knew some of those people because we used to... Everybody used... Back in the day, no matter what you were doing, if you were in comedy, no matter what you were doing... The rest of the
you were night, at the comedy house.
No, you always ended up at the improv. Actually, you always would, because the improv had a very social bar, which the Comedy Store at the time didn't have, and so everybody would end up at the improv, and you know, like the Firesign Theater guys and Second City and whoever was doing anything in comedy in town ended up there.
That is awesome. Oh my God. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of stand-up, but today we're talking about movies we're thankful for, and Last House on the Left was definitely one of the first exploitation films I ever saw. I had a boyfriend show it to me when I was in college. Oh, good Lord, I don't know how he thought that was going to get my pants down, but...
Well, I'll tell you what, on the flip side of that, when it was released, speaking of pants coming down, on the flip side of that, I'm from Pittsburgh originally, and when it was released in Pittsburgh, because I was in it, the press people sent me there to do some press and to open the film and made a big deal out of it. So I was like, although I was on morning talk shows and I was in the newspaper, and several girls from my high school graduating class who would not give me the time of day just a mere 3 years earlier were quite willing to give me a whole lot more than the time of day at that time. So I remember actually being with someone who was completely unreachable when I was in high school, and I remember actually thinking to myself, you know, I think I've made a right career choice here. I think this is it.
Well, I'm just going to say, Last House on the Left didn't work, but Bill Hicks, I'm not even going to lie. that was over for me, but that is just so wonderful. Like I remember this movie. It was so hard to find for so many years. Like we had to go to one of our really special video stores out here to even find it. He's like, oh no, you have to see this movie. It's so great. And I was like, yeah, it's great, but this was not supposed to be.
Oh yeah, it's
movie.
A ripper. It's
okay.
It has. You know, having been involved in it, and you know, it doesn't look the same when you're making it as it does when it's on the screen, obviously. So, you know, we kind of knew what it was, but I've been to enough horror film conventions and signed enough pictures and listened to enough fans. It's the fans of the film who've taught me what it really was, to them, and I'm sometimes flabbergasted at what I hear. You know,
oh no! By the end of it, I was totally happy. But there's a good number of parts in there. Like I'm rooting for Mom when she rips the dick off and all. it gets there.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, that's the reason that it's still around. You know, that's the reason that some 50 years later, people are still watching it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, people still have daughters that go out and do stupid things. So
there you
go.
See, that's it. I remember the first time I heard that, and I was floored. I'm at my table. I forget what show it was. It could have been Chiller or, you know, some show I was doing. And a young girl comes up. She couldn't have been more than 13 or 14 years old. And she said, can I, you know, I want a picture. And would you get my name? And then as I was filling it out, she said, my dad made me watch this. I said, what? She said, yeah, my dad watched it when he was a kid, and he made me watch it because he wanted me to know what could happen if I didn't behave myself. And I said, well, okay.
Well, I feel that might be a little extreme, but again, like I said earlier, to each his own. I have female children, so I completely understand the parents' position in that. I applaud them 100%. May wait until the kids are a little older to show it to them, but I don't
necessarily
censor them.
I have three children, and I didn't let my kids go near it with my permission until they were in their teens. And my I have two boys and a girl who are now two men and a woman. But my daughter, when she saw it, she just laughed. Because she knew David Hess and she knew Fred Lincoln in person, in real life. So,
right.
So it was kind of like funny for her to see Uncle Freddie and Uncle David acting like idiots in the woods.
So it was basically like one of those training videos or PSAs for her. Like, you know, they're trying to be serious, but you just can't take it that way.
Well, it was hard, you know, because she knew them. The fourth wall was broken in a sense inside of her head. It wasn't a film to her. She knew all about it because she'd seen it, because I had posters up in the house, and so she knew all about it, and she knew what it was, and she knew, like I said, she knew David and she knew Fred, and she knew David really, really well because David and I were very close, and so he was always Uncle David to her. Even before she, he was Uncle David to her before she knew he was David from Last House on the Left. So when she saw it, she just laughed. She just laughed at it. She couldn't take it seriously.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I do not think that's appropriate for an after-school special.
No, not at all.
I'll just say it.
Unless the school is Charlie Manson High, you know?
Yeah, this is true. Or Jeffrey Dahmer High.
Dahmer High, right. Or any of the chain of serial killer high schools that must be somewhere in the country.
Oh, I'm sure we have them.
Yeah, but, the Son of Sam.
There you go. It's something that, you know, it gave me a very successful, mediocre career, which in our business is still pretty good, and it's allowed me to live the life that I pretty much wanted to live, which is I always wanted to live like a teenager with a really big allowance. So
don't we all?
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
It. Right. That's it. I've been living. I'm 71 years old, and since I'm 21 years old, I've been living like a teenager with a really big allowance. So, you be grateful for what you got.
Absolutely. Well, Mark, I want to thank you for calling in.
It's my pleasure, man.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
I'm
so excited.
Oh, sure, of course.
By the way, I'll be in contact because Rachel is going to start a new show, and it's going to be called Down the Rabbit Hole. And one of the things we were talking about was her love of stand-up. So I'd say probably sometime in January we'll contact you if you want to come on and
sure.
Talk
always
stand-up.
Willing to help. No worries.
All right.
Oh, that is amazing.
All right, man. Nice meeting you, Rachel. You take care.
You too, Mark.
All right. Thank you, Mark, for calling. I appreciate it, man. Talk to you soon.
You bet. Bye-bye.
So how you doing there, Rachel?
Okay, I'm still trying to breathe. I forgot to bring my glass of water in here. Oh, my God, Last House on the Left, you guys could... Oh. I just want everybody out there listening to know that these motherfuckers have been keeping this secret from me all week and teasing me with it. They did not tell me who was going to call. I am so mad.
No, you're not. You can pitch at me after the show is fine. You're allowed to do that.
I'll forgive you if you talk about your next movie.
Okay.
Remember, we are a team of ninjas. Remember that.
Yes, we are.
I've noticed this. Hey, at least you haven't made me cry yet.
Nah, we're not going to let you do that. So anyway, we were talking about Shakespeare, and I was going to ask you what your favorite Shakespeare play is, if you have one.
I really like Taming of the Shrew because it has some of the best insults.
Okay. That's a good... Now, that's the funny thing. Taming of the Shrew, generally when you talk about Shakespeare, you've got the tragedies, you got the histories, and you got the comedies. Taming of the Shrew is one of the comedies. But then you have a couple of plays that they don't know what the hell they are. So there, and for me, my favorite Shakespeare play is Tempest, The Tempest. I have loved that since I first read it in 10th grade. And so, and there are many reasons for that. So in 1982, out comes a version of The Tempest, directed by Paul Mazursky, and get this cast. John Cassavetes is Prospero. Okay. Gina Rowlands, Susan Sarandon as the Ariel character. Molly Ringwald as Miranda, the daughter. Vittorio Gassman as the boss who falls in love with Prospero's wife. And Raul Julia as Caliban. And a whole bunch of goats. And it is a magnificent film. It is very hard to find these days.
Is that the one that's like really visually just beautiful?
Well, you know what? The first shot, you hear this music by Tomi Yamashita. The first shot is it's all black, and then suddenly it's the orange sun over Greece. And you see John Cassavetes with this cropped white hair, and it's absolutely wonderful in this film. And this is a modern interpretation. This is not Shakespeare, but you know, you have stand-up comedians in this one. You have all sorts of weirdnesses going on, and it's such a wonderful film. But the one thing about the play, the one thing this film really, really makes clear is it's about forgiveness. It's about realizing your own faults and ask, not only asking for forgiveness, but forgiving yourself. And at the end of this movie, all the calmness is really earned. And it's a wonderful adaptation. And that was the thing that when I read the original play, which is called one of his magic plays, is what it's called, that hit me really hard. That it was about forgiveness, and you've got to forgive yourself. Considering what had happened to me previously, I had to forgive myself be able to forgive somebody else. And that's what this movie taught me. Plus, it's funny as fuck. And Raul Julia is just fucking fantastic in this movie.
Well, he's fantastic.
And they're dancing goats to New York, New York.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a wonderful film. And as I said, it's very hard to find. But if you do find it, watch it. You'll love it. It's a magnificent film.
Well,
so there you go.
Okay,
go ahead.
Well, I am actually on to, I think, my last one so far. Well, I have more that I could do, but I did make myself a list so that we could keep it timely and all. My last one is actually along the lines of your second and first one, Carl, and I'm really sorry to do this to everybody. My last movie, I had some choices, but I figured this one would be a good one to talk about, especially in our current crisis. Falling Down. Falling Down changed my life and absolutely saved my life.
Okay.
Quick recap for anybody who hasn't seen it. You go on this journey with a man who is apparently just having a really bad day. But he's had enough of a bad day that he just absolutely loses it. And initially you're thinking this guy, he's, you know, just having a bad day and just taking his temper out. He's mad at the payphone because he doesn't have enough change and he doesn't have enough guts to actually speak to his wife on the phone. He's just trying to get home, you know, traffic jam, gets mad at the guy because his soda costs too much money, starts bashing up the shop. Like, okay, we've all dreamed of doing that, you know, some days. We've all dreamed about standing up to the gangbangers, trying to, you know, shake us down for our briefcase and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But he just keeps going. I mean, one of the most poignant scenes in a movie that I think every single one of us could absolutely relate to is when he goes into the restaurant. I mean, he's already bashed up the shopkeeper's shop, and he did get his soda for 50 cents and pay for it. Didn't pay for anything else he destroyed, but he paid for the soda he wanted. You know, he bashes up the gangbangers. The heat, it's awful, it's disgusting. He just wants to get home. Goes into the restaurant, wants breakfast. They won't serve it to him. He looks at his watch. It's 3 minutes past breakfast. Like, what do you mean you don't have any breakfast here? It's 3 minutes past, and I've probably been standing here for all three of them. How do you not have breakfast? And he loses it. Like we all have wanted to. And then he loses it a little bit further and, you know, pulls out an automatic weapon that he stole from the gangbangers when they tried to drive by shoot him up. Again, he's having a really bad day. Pulls out an automatic weapon, accidentally discharges it because apparently the trigger's really, really finicky. And then changes his mind. He wants a burger. They give him a burger. It's a flat piece of crap like we all get from any fast food place. And that's when he just really goes ballistic. He's like, what is this shit? Like, this is what I'm talking about. This is what's wrong with our country. But beyond all of that, you know, ultimately you figure out dude has just really, his screws are completely loose. He is absolutely gone. He hurts a lot of people for absolutely no reason other than he's just pissed off at the world and they're part of it. And for me, I had seen that movie before many, many years ago, probably when it came out and I wasn't paying much attention to it. Now, I have, off and on throughout my life, struggled with mental health issues. And, you know, I do what I can to take my medication. Most of the time I'm very well medicated and everything is wonderful, but our lovely healthcare system does not always afford me that opportunity. Quite literally, it's just not affordable sometimes. And watching that movie last year, my partner Travis had been telling me, oh, it's a really great movie. You have to watch this movie again. You have to watch this movie. And so I was in a really bad funk last year, one of my bad, bad funks. I needed to get back on my medication. And I watched this story of actually not one, but two people with mental illness. Because if you watch it, the retiring detective's daughter, or wife, she's also way off her rocker. She is just about as nuts as the other guy, but she doesn't have a gun. And I start watching this story of mental illness when I'm having just one of the worst low points of my life. I won't even get into the details, some of which are legal. I was having one of the very lowest points in my life, and I see this movie, and I'm relating more to the character that's angry at the world than I am to the people trying to stop him.
Mm-hmm.
And I called Travis just bawling. I was like, why did you make me watch this movie? Why did you let a depressed person watch this movie? What is wrong with you? But I did call my doctor the next day. And I got back on my medication.
There you go.
And for that, not only am I, but there's a lot of other people in the world who are very grateful for that. Because I'm not going to lie, you know, when you start to relate to that character, just the fuck it of it all, like, I might as well just die. Like, he knew he was going to die at the end of the movie. He knew he was never going to make it home. Like, he knew that, but there's still that delusion, and it's being able to see past that delusion at least long enough to know that you need to get the help that you need.
Mm-hmm.
And that movie for me really made me think about it and was like, wow, like, I would never in my life, not even at my lowest point, do something like that. But when you start saying, well, I can see how somebody can really lose their mind, and I mean, see this guy, he had a thing or two, right, except for the blatant racism and sexism, but
mm-hmm.
those are other issues to talk about. That is one of the movies I'm most thankful for, because that movie, and I'm actually going to say this was probably a couple years ago that I saw it and got back on my medication, but it really helped me realize, at least temporarily enough, that I had to make that appointment. I had to go to my doctor no matter what it cost, whatever I had to do. Like, I don't care, you know, if we were going to have to do a Zach and Mary makes a porno kind of thing. Like, I was going to get the money to get my medication and see my doctor, because you see how bad it can get sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the thing about that film is the one, I'm not a real big fan of the film, but the one line that I think is wonderful is when he realizes near the end. And he says, I am the bad guy. You know,
that was the moment.
Yeah, that's the moment. And that's the most true moment in the whole film for me. It's a decent film. I just didn't connect with it as much. You know, I mean, we all have different things we connect with.
Well, and it's not that I liked it for the film itself. It's really Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what we were talking about, because, you know, if you think I'm going to watch Harold and Maude all the time, you're crazy.
Oh, because I had it on my list, sat down today and tried to watch Falling Down Again. Now, I did have to stop and make some beautiful stroganoff for dinner, but I tried to watch it again, and no, I can't sit down and watch it right now. I don't need it. But any time I've hit a low point since then, I think back to the moment, like how I felt when I made that call to Travis, just crying and saying, like, why did you tell me to watch this movie? Why did you let me, you know how bad I can get. Why did you let me watch this movie? And then he was like, I'm sorry, baby. Like, it's just a good movie. And I was like, you're damn right. It's a good movie, but and I'm just... Yeah.
Yeah.
After.
Yeah. Oh, I get it. Trust me, I get it. But you know what? I'm glad you watched the movie, because guess what? You're part of this group now. You're family.
Exactly. And I appreciate
And without
that
movie,
you
wouldn't be family. Just remember
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Well, and that's actually the whole point I have for this show this evening. I know we're probably going to talk some more, but the whole reason that I'm actually happy to do this show, well, I'm always happy to do a show with you, Carl, because you're awesome. But part of the reason I'm so happy to do this is because it was so hard for me to pick even just a few movies that I'm so thankful for, because it is movies in general that have changed my life in so many different ways and made me so thankful for so many different things. Like, every movie I've ever watched has changed me in some way or another. And, you know, I'm a huge cinephile, and actually how I bond with people. I'm not really good with, you know, making just random conversation or anything, but you tell me what you like to watch, and I'll give you a stack of at least 5 movies right off the bat. Like, you got to see this one, you got to see this one, you got to see this one. I mean, when Travis and I first started dating many, many years ago, he was living alone in a tiny house out in the country, not a whole lot to do, no cable or anything like that. I brought him over, and we loaded up a trash bag of all of these movies he'd never seen. He had not watched a lot of movies in his day and had not even heard of a lot of even some of the classics, like I'm talking Young Frankenstein and things like that. Loaded up a giant trash bag full of movies, and yes, Stranger Than Fiction was in there. And I knew that we had something going at that point when he started texting me and calling me and talking to me about the different movies out of the bag that he had watched. And he was like, oh my God, Young Frankenstein. And he'd start quoting things. And that's how I connect with people. That's why I'm so thankful for just movies in general, is they make such beautiful connections with people.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And there are many that I'm not talking about either. But you know, you whittle it down to 4 or 5. Now, I'll admit something. I've never really had a great ability to connect with the opposite sex. There have been 3 women in my life. And there's one in particular, and people have been listening to me. She was actually on a week ago with me. Vicky is my ex-wife. And this is a relationship that's been very rocky over the period of years, and yet we're drawn to each other. It may not work in terms of romantic, but we keep trying to connect because we know there's something there.
Right.
And sometimes you don't get what you want, but you get what you need, to paraphrase the Rolling Stones.
Exactly.
And so a number of years ago, I was in Maryland working at Music and Arts, and I had a friend, Elliot, and Elliot and I would go to films all the time, and we went to see Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Now, I can tell you, basically, any movie that changes me, at the end of the movie, I can't get up from my seat. It's just generally the case, because I'm just somehow destroyed and somehow rebuilding myself. And that particular movie hit such a true note with me that no matter what happens, you can't, it's not just about erasing memories. It's that those memories will never be erased, that there's something innate. There's something that, you know, it's fated to happen because you both need to learn things. And no matter what, you're drawn back. And one of the things I will say about Vicky is she's been an incredible blessing. It's been a difficult time. And it's all, you know, there are times where it's good and times where it's bad. Times we don't talk for a while. But no matter what, the connection's always going to be there. And that's what that movie taught me, that sometimes that's exactly what you have to go through. And it's I'll tell you what, I'm glad I did. And I'm still glad I did. I'm still glad she's a part of my life and always will be till the day I die. And that, to me, is a real blessing.
That is. And I'm not allowed to talk about that movie because I've seen it one time and I will cry.
Okay.
No, you go right.
But it is a movie that is very emotional.
Yes.
And if you've gone through a relationship that's difficult, and there's still feelings about that person, it's a real difficult movie to get through. And
it really is.
Elliot, who was with me, like looked at me like he knew. He's just said, you can't move. I said, no, I can't. And he didn't say anything until much later, a couple weeks later. And we talked about it. But that's a movie that definitely I'm very thankful for, because it made clear my not only my feelings toward Vicky or that sort of thing, but it made clear that, you know, no matter how hard something is to get through, it's important to get through it, and it's important to still care.
I guess you just got to walk hard.
Uh-oh. Yeah, you do. So go ahead.
Okay, so I know my list has been so corny, but I, like I said, there's reasons for everything, and my brain works a little odd. The last movie I have, actually, that I am so thankful for, absolutely thankful for, and I do have to preface this by saying, laughter is the best medicine, and I cannot help but laughing. I mean, I'm just thinking about it, and I'm laughing. What happened to be the movie Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story? And honestly, there's actually a semi-serious reason for it, but the first time I saw that movie, I was bored and alone and pregnant, and the father of my child was off for another one of his week-long out-of-town work stays, and you know, I had no money, no food, nothing else, but he absolutely insisted on having satellite television. So I was stuck at the house for the first time in probably 10 years. I had, like, television hooked up in my house and not just the DVD player or something. And so I pulled up Walk the Line. I'd been hearing about it. What a great, fantastic, flipping movie it was. I watched it. It was a good movie. Yeah, I wasn't that impressed. I didn't think it was like the greatest thing since sliced bread, but whatever. It was a good movie. But immediately after that, on the queue, up came Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. Now, for anybody who knows me, they know that I have a deep-seated, like, in my soul love for John C. Reilly. I mean, the man's a classically trained actor. He's fantastic. He's not just funny. He actually does some really great serious stuff, too. I mean, Gangs of New York, have you seen that? Jeez.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I love John C. Reilly. I love laughing at things. So I was like, you know what? Go ahead. I'm not doing anything for the rest of the day. I'm just going to be, you know, pregnant, puking my guts out because the medicine's not helping anyway, so might as well. So I watched that immediately after watching Walk the Line. So not only did I see all of the direct correlations, which made it even funnier, it was just that I just kept laughing. I couldn't stop laughing. And when my now ex got home eventually, I was like, you have to watch this movie. This is like the funniest thing I've ever seen. You have to watch this movie with me. And he didn't want to watch it. And he got upset because it was making fun of Walk the Line. And it made me realize at that point, I was like, this is not the person I need to be trying to spend my life with. They won't even give me the time of day to watch a movie that I'm like, is probably the most hilarious thing I've ever seen at this point. So, yeah, that relationship didn't end well. It wasn't necessarily because of that movie, but that was definitely one of the, you know, nails in the coffin there. But since then, I acquired my own copy and watched it again and still kept laughing. And it's so full of just such stupid, funny quotes that no matter what I'm doing or where I'm at, I can think of something from that movie and laugh. Or I can bring up in a random situation one of the lines from the movie, like everybody likes to quote, "And you never paid for drugs." Not once. You know, if you've got a mooch friend that's trying to ask you for money for, you know, the rest of their burger at the fast food place, you know, you just look at them and be like, and you never paid for drugs. But the most effective, weird, wonderful thing that I'm so thankful for from this movie, actually there's two of them. One of them is, it's actually a personal a thing between Travis and I and our relationship. If we're ever in one of those really stupid arguments, you know, the ones where it's like you're arguing over which side the pillowcase needs to be on or which direction the toilet paper is supposed to hang, and you're just,
right.
You get so ridiculously mad that you're just like screaming and yelling at each other, and you stop and think about it in your head for a second, and you're like, why are we yelling about toilet paper? One of us, when we get into these dumb fights, will inevitably realize that we're in a really dumb fight and look at each other and be like, but what about my dreams, do we?
Yep.
And then, you know, in kind, obviously both of us end up stopping and laughing for a second, but in kind is kind of an acceptance of that we really need to stop this and just, like, hands down, just be done. The acceptance is, well, I told you, Edith, I can't build you a candy house. Well, because it's the argument. They're like 14 years old in the movie and married, and they've already got like 6 kids or something, and they get into this argument. Yeah. She's telling him about his dreams and how they're stupid, and he's like, but I have a #1 hit single on the radio. Like, my dream is actually true. And she's like, but what about my dreams, Dewey? And that's when he screams out, Edith, I already told you, I can't build you a candy house. The sun will melt all the candy. It'll fall apart. It just won't work. So I'm thankful for having that ability to, you know, just look at my partner and be like, you know, but what about my dreams, Dewey? And we both realize that we're being 14-year-old idiots. But the second thing that I am most thankful for in that movie is that I know all of the words, well, to all of the songs in the movie, but I know all of the words to the song Let's Duet.
Right.
I don't know if everybody's familiar with that one, but it starts out, in my dream you're blowing me some kisses. That's one of my favorite things to do. And, you know, it's very much Let's Duet. And it is a duet between the man and the woman, and it's very much sexual innuendo the entire time. And the reason I am so thankful for that is because, A, it's just a hilarious song to sing to people, especially if you've got somebody who knows the opposite part. But my story here, my last story, I guess, is I am... My biological father passed away a little over about a year and a half ago, and he was very, very, very well known in the bar scene, and in his later years became very well known in the karaoke scene because the woman he was dating for a number of years was a karaoke DJ, so they started doing karaoke all the time. Well, when I say well known in the bar scene, I mean literally, like, even though he was dying and had broken a hip and was on a walker and couldn't even really support himself, I was still having to drive him down to the bar every day. That kind of well known. So when he passed, I didn't have like a real big anything planned, like no big funeral or anything, but his family took care of having a funeral and everybody wanted to gather, considering that most of the people that showed up to the funeral were all of his favorite bartenders and some of the favorite patrons at the bar. I went ahead and decided to announce at the funeral. I was like, okay, well, if anybody wants to gather, they've decided to set up karaoke for us tonight at his favorite karaoke spot, and we can all go down there and, you know, have a couple drinks and do karaoke in his honor. So I might need to mention that his side of the family is very, very teetotaler, super Southern Baptist.
Okay.
Very conservative. No drinking, no smoking, no dancing, but they do love to sing. So all of my conservative aunts showed up to this smoky hole in the wall bar in Podunk, Arkansas, to do karaoke in honor of their dead brother. That's fine. That's fine. I'm not a singer at all. You guys can probably tell I have a bit of an odd voice. I could probably do some real good comedy for you, but so we all get down there, and they are the bar is giving out for anybody who will drink it. They are giving out what they call the Mark Special, which is his favorite drink of bourbon and sweet tea.
Okay.
Hence the bar giving it out for free. They didn't lose any money. It's disgusting. So I have all of my crazy teetotaler aunts, and I also have to mention that I have not ever been a fan of this family, nor have they ever been a fan of me. And now that I did not have that last link, I gave no fucks. And, of course, Travis is there for me. And, of course, he knows all of the appropriate parts for that song. And so at the end of the night, we got up together and did a duet of Let's Do
It.
And
nice.
The looks that slowly spread across the table, it was almost like, you know, when you do a wave in a crowd.
Uh-huh.
Like, I could see, because I have some really cool cousins that are, like, off the wall, kind of like me. And I see one of my aunts, like, you know, they're kind of sitting there behind the table, very prim, and, you know, got their hands kind of clasped, and, you know, they've gotten up there and they've sang a couple songs, yay, yay. And then Travis and I get up there and start doing it. We did a pretty killer job, and then I see my aunt look over to my cousin and kind of whisper in her ear, and my cousin gets this big grin on her face, and you just see her nod this big grin and go, uh-huh, and the look of shock. And I already could tell what my aunt asked her, wait. Is this song about sex? Yes, it is. Yes, it is, Auntie. Good to never see you again. Bye. Have a great night. So I will always and forever be grateful to that movie for creating the song Let's Duet so that I could say my final farewells to my bitchy, bitchy aunt.
There you go. Now, just, you know, you're talking about a movie that makes you laugh. I'll mention very briefly before I go into my last one. For me, the best comedy that has ever been done on film, my favorite comedy, is Blazing Saddles.
Oh, God, yeah.
I love Blazing Saddles for many, many reasons. But I will tell you something. Right. And there's so many quotable lines, right? You know, Mongo, only pawn in Game of Life. Or, you know, where the white women at? Or whatever, right? But there's a particular line that I always use. Always. And it's when I can't, when you take something out, like a book or something, you're trying to put it back in and you can't get it in where it's supposed to go. I always say, just think of your secretary. Schwap. I don't know how many times. You know the scene I'm talking about, right?
I know exactly what you're talking about, because Blazing Saddles is one of my favorite comedies of all time. I mean, Madeline Kahn is fucking perfect, and unfortunately, that's one I haven't gotten Travis to watch yet because somebody borrowed my copy and didn't return it, the rat fucking bastards. yeah, like if I'm just being dramatic in the morning, I'll throw myself out of the room in my bathroom and just go, I'm tired.
Well, I tell you what, there was a day when I was working at Music and Arts, a gentleman by the name of Robert Vasquez. I don't know how it got started. But the whole day, we'd see each other. We'd be quoting lines. The whole day. You know, and I saw him a lot during the day with what he was doing, what I was doing. So you know, I mean, there's just times. I love that movie. But I do want to talk about this last one. And again, people that have been listening know that I'm a musician. I'm a church musician. Not only that, I have a minor in philosophy. I have a minor in theology, and I've got a master's in church music. So I'm very, very much attuned to being a Christian. However, I'm one of those much more liberal. But it's one of those things that you know, you try to do good, and sometimes it doesn't work, but you got to walk the line and understand where you're going, and sometimes it's very difficult. And there's a movie called Calvary that came out probably around 2012, I think. And I was in Maryland at the time, and I saw it with this very close friend of mine, Barb. And basically the story is it's an Irish small town. There is a priest there, and right at the beginning, one of his parishioners who's in confession says, you know, I was molested by a priest when I was young, and Father, I'm going to kill you in a week because you're an innocent priest, and they'll, so he gets his death threat. And so the whole idea is that he goes through this week and all the troubles and everything that he goes through, but he yet still faces the consequences at the end. And it does not end well for him. However, there's a line in it, and what the movie really is about, again, and I mentioned this before with Tempest, is it's about forgiveness. And it also takes a very good look at organized religion and how it fucked up, and that even in that case there are good people trying to do the right thing. And the one thing that's done is I try to do the right thing. God knows I don't get it right, but at the very, very least, I walk the walk that I say I do. And I'm consistent with that. And that movie, I'm thankful for that, because it's a way to show people that, particularly in these days, when you look at the divides we have with the conservative Christians and so on and so forth, that there's a different way to look at religion. There's a different way to look at people. And you have to accept them for what they are. You know, you can't condemn someone until you know their story, and you still shouldn't condemn them. And that's the whole point. And that movie made that very, very clear to me. And again, it's another movie, at the end of the movie, I couldn't get out of my chair.
It sounds like one I would have to watch.
Yeah, I'd recommend it highly. And of course, the main star is Brendan Gleeson. And he's just...
I was just about to say, it's Brendan Gleeson. Like, I'm looking at it right now. I can't wait. Like, I am loving all of these people. I really weirdly binge a lot of Brit TV. I don't know what it is, but I know all of these people. And I'm like, yes! Yes, it's all my British fam.
It's a great film. It's a great film.
It sounds like it.
It's written by Martin McDonagh, who also did The Guard with Brendan Gleeson.
Nice.
And his brother also did In Bruges and Seven Psychopaths.
I was just about to say... In Bruges and Seven Psychopaths are two of my, like, weird favorite movies. I love both of those. I actually just recently watched Seven Psychopaths. I've only seen it a few times, but every time I watch it, it just, oh, it gets me. It really does. It seems so, if you read the description of it, it's like, oh, this guy kidnaps dogs. Wah. But you watch the movie, and it is so much deeper. There's so many layers. It's like an onion, Shrek. I mean.
Well, and then again, there's always Sam Rockwell, too.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Who I fucking love. Period.
How can you not?
But I tell you what, Tempest for me is a really important film. And it's one that if you have any interest in looking at religion differently than what you hear in the papers all the time. Everyone thinks, you know, when I say to someone I'm a Christian, immediately I have to say, well, I'm not one of those.
Right.
You know, I wish I didn't have to say that.
I don't even bother telling people whether I am or am not Christian anymore. I walk the walk that I do, and I take care of my fellow man, and I try to be good to people, and I try not to judge anybody, and if that makes me a Christian, then boy howdy, guess that's what I am.
Who cares? You're doing what you think is right.
I walk what appears to be the Christian way of life. I just don't associate with organized religion.
Yeah, but my mother was very much.
That's a whole nother podcast.
You know, but the thing about it is, since I'm a church organist and since I'm involved in it all the time, you know, people until they get to know me, then they know, shit, he's not anything like that. What the fuck were we thinking about? You know?
Right.
But there you go. So, movies that we're thankful for. Rachel. I want to thank you very, very much for doing this and coming in. We've got more going on. I did talk to Corey, and she's still recovering, but she'll be back. But in December, we're definitely getting your new show. So, just give everyone a little tag on that again. What's coming up?
All
for
right,
you?
Everybody. Just for future reference sake, we will be starting a new podcast with me as the host. Hopefully, I can find some interesting co-hosts to come on with me. Called Down the Rabbit Hole. Really, any kind of topic you're interested in delving further into, researching. I kind of explained it to Carl the first time. The idea came to me when I watched The Weather one day, and somebody sent me a meme with Tim Curry in it, and I thought about curly hair, and then I started looking up whether or not that was Tim Curry's real hair in the movie It. Confirmed. It is, by the way. And just going down the rabbit hole of interesting topics and delving further into them. And we're hoping to get that up soon and me have a better description of things. I'm working on that.
Well, I tell you what, if anyone is interested in a specific topic, they can always drop a line at our Facebook page and leave us a message. And we'll see what we can do.
Yes,
absolutely.
The Deviant Legion on Facebook. Guys, drop us a line. And if you haven't already, go ahead and look into Incredibly Strange Films. That's kind of one of our, I guess, sister/host networks that we work with. They are a totally fun group, and you will never, never lack for something really weird or just interesting to watch. So drop a line on Deviant Legion and Incredibly Strange Films. You know you've got time to do it.
Yeah, we're in lockdown, people. Come on. Come on. So I'm going to do a little bit of housekeeping. This week, we are basically taking some time off. But on Sunday, and Rachel, by the way, if you want to do this, you're more than welcome to come in. We are going, of course, it's coming up on Thanksgiving. You know, and it's all about turkey and giblets and mutated turkey monsters.
Of course.
And so, yes. And so on Sunday, Danae and Danae's Dungeon is sponsoring a commentary watch. on the only pro-Christian, anti-drug, mutated turkey monster movie wherein the narrator is lecturing you about how bad drugs are while he's chain-smoking and going into a coughing fit movie. And I'm not joking.
I am so down for that. Oh, wow.
Seriously.
I don't know if you realize this or not, but I was one of the people that actually contributed a good chunk of change to help get MST3K back.
Oh, cool.
Commentary watch is my bag. Actually, my sewing desk that I sit in here at while I do these podcasts, I'll have to send you guys some pictures. It's decorated with all my stickers that I got from it.
So another thing, too, is think about this. We're coming up on Christmas. Okay, think of a commentary, a watch you want to do a commentary on, a Christmas movie.
Oh, absolutely. We might have to talk to Mr. Irvin about that one.
Oh, yeah, we could do that. We could definitely do that.
He's our Christmas king. I mean, come on.
Well, I'll tell you one that I got to check Disney Plus, but I'm pretty sure they have it. The one I want to do this year. It's a film called One Magic Christmas. Now, do you know that film at all?
It sounds familiar, but that also sounds like the title of every other Christmas movie I've ever heard about.
Well, let me put it this way, okay? There's one thing that makes it completely different. Two things, actually. But the one thing is Harry Dean Stanton as a guardian angel.
Ooh, I may have seen that one.
Yeah, that's what I want to do. Now, in the past with Stephen, we've done Christmas Evil. We even did the Kirk Cameron one.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, that was fucking painful. Yeah, Surviving Christmas. That was fucking awful. But definitely think of a Christmas movie. If you want to do one of Sam's, we'll work that out. I'll contact
him. Oh, no. I was just going to see if he had any suggestions for horrible Christmas movies. I mean, if he's made good Christmas
movies, well,
that
we can do,
too. Obviously has.
You know what? You're friends with him on Facebook. Send him a message.
I definitely will, because if he's made good Christmas movies, you know he's had to watch some bad ones.
Absolutely. Oh, you know what? There's one. I can't think of the name of it. But you know who Michael Shannon is?
Vaguely.
Okay, so he started a movie, it's a couple years ago, that's a Christmas movie about furries.
About what?
Furries.
Oh, God.
Exactly. I've been wanting to see that. I've never seen it.
Yeah,
I like bad movies, by the way. I love bad movies.
Oh, I do, too.
Yeah,
I'm a
actually, to be honest, Blood Freak, which we're going to do on Sunday, is another movie I could say changed my life, because it did.
Nice.
It did, but we'll talk about that on Sunday. So that's this Sunday,
will.
Blood Freak. And it's at 8 o'clock at night, okay, Eastern Standard Time, which would be 7 your time in Arkansas.
Yeah.
All right, so listen, folks, thank you very, very much for joining us. Hope you enjoyed the show. And just next time you watch a film, be thankful for film and for movies, because they are one of the things that gets us through life. And we learn things from them, and we laugh at them. And we escape with them. And they are wonderful things to be thankful for. So have a really good evening, folks. Thank you for listening. Rachel, again, thank you so much for everything you've done. Seriously.
Oh, thank you, guys. I always love it.
All right. And, folks, have a good night. Thank you very much. Say good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.